Oh, no. Owens looking to finish the job. Oh, and a power bomb into the apron. Spine-shattering power bomb by the WWE Universal Champion.
Anyway, Kevin Owens has done that in the past to a number of superstars. They haven't been able to get up from it. And this could be the moment for these two men. Moments away from claiming the United States title, but they've got to get Reigns back in the ring.
Roman is lifeless.
Yeah, trying to just drag this dead weight of the champion Reigns back into the middle of the ring.
Every piece of that 260-pound frame now in the ring and now at the mercy of Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens.
And I guarantee you these two aren't going to show any mercy.
Why should they? Owens and Jericho spent months trying to topple the Roman Empire.
What do you got?
This could be their moment. Come on, you guys, drink it in.
Drinking in a two-on-one assault right now.
Yeah, they're just, Jericho and Owens are just gonna punish Roman Reigns.
Well within the rules of the match.
Oh, they're supposed to be tagging Kevin in and out. Owens, show! Bonebreaker! Jericho, cover, hooks the leg on Reigns, and we've got a brand new United States champion.
What's going on, internet, and welcome to the European Uppercut podcast. Insert correct number here for the episode. I am your glorious host, Adam Pearson, and I am joined by the Cass to my Enzo, the Marks to my Spencer, the John to my Lewis, PK Punk.
Thank you for the very nice intro there.
I try my best, PK, I try my best. How have you been, my man? We've not had you on for a while.
No, I've been good. Been a busy couple of weeks since New Year, coming back to work, but been some good wrestling on, some good wrestling coming up, which I'm looking forward to talking about. And before we get started, if anyone hasn't watched Wrestle Kingdom yet, you deserve a slap on the wrist.
That was going to be my very next question. Have you watched Wrestle Kingdom, and did you orgasm as hard as I did by the end of it?
I've watched the whole show once, but I've watched the final. I watched the last four matches twice each, and then I've watched the main event a further time. The Okada Omega, and it was absolutely stunning. From Shibata and Goto all the way through to the end of the show, it's just five-star match after five-star match
after six-star match. If you read the Wrestling Observer,
yeah, so I don't know if I'd go that far, but it's easily a five-star, no question about it. Just from psychology, storytelling, in-ring action. The fact that they had to follow Naito and Tanahashi, who everyone were red hot for, and then they had to follow that and then still keep the crowd interest. They did it brilliantly by the fact that it was a bit slower in that first like 5-10 minutes, and then they just started to ramp up and ramp up and ramp up, and you could hear that normally quite quiet crowd just coming unglued for absolutely everything they did.
Like the last 20 minutes is just, I never want to see that dragon suplex off the top rope again.
Oh no, that was evil. Like, I've seen those moves before, but normally people launch and let go, so they just end up doing a moonsault, not hold on and drive them head and neck first. Like, Okada came out at New Year's Dash the next day and he was just taped up everywhere. His back, his ribs, his shoulder, his neck. He did a press conference the day after and he had a massive purple bruise and welt all over the side of his neck and the top of his chest.
Comes out looking like Cesaro on a bad day.
Very much. But I think Omega has been one of the best in the world throughout all of 2016 and proved it at the Tokyo Dome, and Okada just cemented himself as the man in New Japan. And Naito as well. I thought Naito had a proper star-making performance on top of a fantastic 2016 against Tanahashi in the semi-main.
If you didn't know who Naito was, like, on January 3rd, you certainly know now.
Yeah, definitely. I love that whole LIJ group as an entire entity is probably my favourite thing in wrestling at the moment. You've got Sanada, who TNA'd in Nafol, where he goes to Japan, goes back to Japan, I should say, gets a major personality boost, and he's one of the most fascinating things to watch in the product at the moment. Evil's got an amazing gimmick. Naito, obviously, is right up there in there. Well, in fact, I was reading somewhere, Naito is the first person in about 8 years outside of a core group of people to win MVP of Japanese wrestling. He won it for 2016. Previous before that, it was always like Tanahashi or Okada or like a certain three or four people who always won it for going back the last 10, 15 years. So that says leaps and bounds about how good of a year he had.
It was a good, like, it feels weird on January 4th, match of the year and pay-per-view of the year are already pretty much locked down for the Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah. it was similar last year, to be fair. I enjoyed this year's Wrestle Kingdom more than 10. I thought 10 was very good, but again, the undercard was weaker than the main, like the last four or five matches. But I think this year had a much stronger undercard compared to last year. Like the ROH title match was very good. The tag title match was very good. A lot of fun with the Young Bucks against Trent and Rocky Romero. That was a really fun match. Even Tiger Mask W versus Dark Tiger or Kota Ibushi versus ACH, if you want to go by the guys who were under the masks.
If you want to pick holes in Kota Ibushi's CWC contract that he couldn't appear as Kota Ibushi, so went in as Tiger Mask 2.
Tiger Mask W, yeah. And
made no efforts to hide the fact he was Kota Ibushi. No,
really didn't. I think Kota Ibushi's been very smart because he's in New Japan as Tiger Mask W, which is obviously like the anime is still ongoing at the moment. New Japan guys appear in the anime as well, which is bizarre to see like animated versions of Okada just show up to talk to Tiger Mask in the anime, which is, again, if you've got access to it, is a really fun watch. And then you've got like ACH, who's like technically not been on New Japan pay-per-view as himself, but he's Tiger Mask. Tiger the Dark, I should say. But then Ibushi also shows up in DDT and does all the random small promotions as himself still. So he's still making good money by working everywhere. But he can get away with it because of the Tiger Mask W character now.
Yeah, it's like a very sophisticated Mick Foley thing, isn't it? Like multiple characters, one guy, only this guy can actually go.
Yeah, and is again one of the best guys on the planet. Just the internet stuff makes me laugh because like they've had tweets this week of Itami with Ibushi, and then that got people talking again. It's like, no, he's happy back in Japan. He would have signed to WWE if they let him still work Japan. They said no, so he's not going to go to WWE anytime soon.
No.
And then you've got like obviously John Cena trolling everybody by the sounds of it and posting pictures of Kenny Omega, the Omega symbol, Kenny from South Park, and Mega Man.
Which leads us into the not-so-knockout news.
It's time for the not-so-knockout news!
Hello and welcome to this week's Not So Knockout News, the New Zealand edition. According to PW Insider, WWE officials are finally planning on inducting Ravishing Rick Rude into the WWE Hall of Fame this year. Rude, who passed away in April 1999, made appearances for WWE, WCW and ECW, among other federations. He held the Intercontinental title and the WCW United States Heavyweight title, among others. He was forced to retire after suffering a back injury during a match against Sting in 1994. There are rumours of a current WWE employee being inducted this year, but we haven't confirmed the name yet. Diamond Dallas Page was the first name announced going into the Hall of Fame this year. The 2017 Hall of Fame ceremony takes place on Saturday, April 1st, from Orlando during WrestleMania 33 weekend, and I'll be in attendance. WrestleMania 34 will return to New Orleans in 2018 with the announcement on WWE.com and on Monday Night Raw. The last time WWE held a WrestleMania in New Orleans was 2014 at WrestleMania 30, which saw Daniel Bryan win the WWE World Heavyweight title and Brock Lesnar beating The Undertaker's WrestleMania win streak, and I was there for that. TNA officials have continued having talks with former WWE champion Alberto El Patron. But as of earlier this week, no deal between the two has been signed. The talks between Del Rio and the company go back several months following his release from WWE on September 9th. No word yet as if Alberto will make his TNA debut this week in Orlando, but word is that we should not expect to see any major roster or creative changes at the tapings. The next set of tapings are in March, and I wonder if Paige can or will join him there. Seth Rollins announced his entry into the 2017 Royal Rumble match on Twitter. He posted the following: "Last year I missed at WrestleMania. This year I'll be in the main event. Officially announcing my entry into the hashtag Royal Rumble, hashtag tear it down." This takes the total confirmed entrance list to 10, with Seth Rollins joining Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, The New Day, Chris Jericho, Braun Strowman, Baron Corbin, and of course The Undertaker. And finally, celebrating birthdays this week, Tamina Snuka turns 39.
How you doing?
Hacksaw Jim Duggan turns 63.
How you doing?
Former diva Kelly Kelly is 30.
How you doing?
And Shane McMahon turns 47. And that's it for this week's Not So Knockout News.
Damn! This is Europe's number one professional wrestler, Gredo. It's yourself. Look, if you're down, if you feel like shit, I'm telling you, what you need to do is listen to the European Uppercut Podcast. That's right, the European Uppercut Podcast. I'll say it three times, the European Uppercut Podcast. It's the best podcast in the world, apart from The Art of Wrestling, Stone Cold's, JR's, Chris Jericho's, but it's definitely better than Bauer and Pollock.
Is Kenny Omega coming to WWE? Because last time John Cena did this, it was with AJ Styles. And we all said he's trolling us. And then we got a very nice shot of Roman Reigns in the ring while AJ was coming out at the Royal Rumble. Yeah.
Still one of the biggest botches in all of 2016. But, I genuinely don't know, because Kenny is very smart. The way he carries himself, the way he plays everything off. There's a reason why him and the Young Bucks are so highly sought after at the moment. Young Bucks have effectively changed independent wrestling for the way it works. Like, the amount of t-shirts and the amount of stuff they do completely changed the game for everybody. Now it's a feasible thing to make major money outside of signing for WWE. But if you're Kenny, realistically, are you going to get given that title at any point? You could have another six-star match contender with Okada in 6 months' time. Doesn't mean they're necessarily going to trust a Canadian wrestler, even though he lives in Japan and he's married to a Japanese woman who is herself a fantastic wrestler, Shida. Would they trust him to carry their main title? But then you've also got to think they're doing the G1 Climax and they're doing some shows in LA. So they need someone who could straddle that line of being fluent in Japanese, but then obviously being English as his main language. So I would like to see him show up just purely because I know he'd do really well, and he's too good of a talent to be on. As good as New Japan is and as big of a stage they have at the moment, they're still like 1/8 the size of WWE. The WWE is the juggernaut. They're, if you want people to know who you are, that's where you go. Even AJ Styles said it. He said when he's worked in TNA for 12 years and people would occasionally come up to him and recognize him on the street. He made his debut at the Royal Rumble and he's getting mobbed. And he can't walk anywhere without people being right in his face and wanting to get pictures. It's just a completely different scale. So personally as a fan, I would love to see him show up, but I also quite happily see him put on Match of the Year contenders with Naito and Tanahashi and everybody over there.
Completely agree. Would love to see it, but if I only get to see him on New Japan World, which is really good value, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it works at like £7.20 or something ridiculous for a lot of good wrestling.
Yeah, and that's why I ended up watching it so much, to be fair. I watched because I watched it with the English commentary at first, which was all right. And then I watched it with the Japanese commentary on my second watch, and the Japanese commentary is just amazing.
How, like, with all due respect, how do you know?
I can't understand what they're saying, but it's universal because you can hear as excited as they get for things, and then like when Okada hits his Rainmakers in the main event, they just lose their minds, and then every time Kenny gets them up for the One Wing Angel, you can hear them, like, they can hear that excitement in them. And I never felt that with Carino and Kelly, even though I could understand the words they were saying. The Japanese commentators, I haven't got a single idea what they're saying, got the excitement of the matches over more to me.
If we have any Japanese listeners or listeners that know Japanese, please, if you haven't watched Wrestle Kingdom, go and watch it and let us know what the commentators are saying and how excited they are. Or if they're just arguing over other things like JBL and other SmackDown commentators. I lose track of who's on commentary now. Raw's got like five commentators.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's all a little bit Real Housewives of Raw for my liking.
Yeah, this is where I'll be absolutely devastated if it turns out they are just plugging Twitter and New Japan Network for the entire show and they're not actually talking about anything to do with the matches.
And that ruins everything. Speaking of people coming to WWE, PK, Chris Hero, welcome home.
Yeah, I made up for him and I was really shocked, but it's perfect way to bring him back in, complete surprise, facing off against Nakamura.
Yeah, they told no one. They brought him in on a house show, so they didn't even do it on NXT. And he didn't say anything. It was very reminiscent of the Triple H Undertaker WrestleMania build for the second of the three, where they just both stood in the ring, no one said anything. Like, Chris Hero points at the title and then just walks off. And I was like, this is going to be amazing. Because Chris Hero got fired for not cutting weight, went on and put world-class matches on elsewhere, then suddenly was saying, oh, by the way, I had a thyroid problem. WWE went, oh, bugger, that's a little bit awkward.
Yeah.
And then they brought him back, and he's now in an NXT system where he's not going to get threatened at gunpoint by Bill DeMott.
Nope, and he's coming into a system with some of the best talent in the world already there, and a lot more of it rumoured to be showing up. When you've got the likes of Tommy End there, who... obviously, they changed his name now. I think it's Killian Black or something like that they changed it to. Which, not Killian. Killian something's Big Damo's new name. Alistair Black. After the Satanist Alistair Crowley. But even though they changed Tommy End's name here, Tommy End and Chris Hero have had some absolutely stunning matches on the indies. As soon as those guys lock up anywhere near a takeover special, that'll be the thing everybody's talking about for 6 months. That'll be the Zayn and Nakamura 2017, if that happens.
It's going to be insane. NXT, it went through a bit of a rough patch where I didn't think they knew who they were booking or why they were booking them. And I think they misused a lot of people. I'm very happy that as he's progressed in the system, they're slowly making Andrea Seymour Alnas, or whatever he's called, wear less and less stereotypical, verging on racist clothing.
Yeah.
And they're just letting him wrestle. Like,
he's having good matches, like this week. I've not watched it yet, but I've heard good things about him and Oney Lorcan.
It was really good.
This week.
I don't know if he's done it before, but he does this headlock, camelock DDT thing, and it looks wicked. It looks like it could kill a guy.
And I felt really sorry for him because when he was La Sombra in New Japan, there's a reason why they hired him. He is a fantastic wrestler, But they brought him in exactly the same time as they brought in Austin Aries. They brought in Nakamura. Joe came back properly and had his big run with the belt. So him and Aries, to an extent, were just kind of there. And then Bobby Roode came in, and then Bobby Roode's debut match was also against Cien Almas and trying to get Cien over. But Bobby Roode's going to overshadow everyone who gets put in front of him for a while.
Because he's amazing.
That's going to be crazy, that atmosphere take over Toronto with Nakamura and Roode.
Yeah, it's going to be just so good. Speaking of Samoa Joe, see how I'm segueing here? Is he going to be in the Royal Rumble?
He deserves it. He's done everything he can in NXT. He's brought everybody up to that next level. And if he did come out in the Rumble, it's quite a big name, especially if... AJ wouldn't be in there, but because obviously defending the belt. But you'll have plenty of guys in that Rumble that he could start something with. Even someone like a Corbin. Joe comes in and just kills Baron Corbin.
I'm loving what they're doing with Corbin at the moment.
I've turned the corner on him big time.
I've always liked him. And at some point in that Rumble, we're going to get that Strowman-Corbin face-off, because they're essentially the same person.
Yeah.
it's going to be quite intense.
And again, I think the build they've done with Strowman is one of the best parts of Raw. It's the Strowman stuff, and Jericho is the only reason to even remotely check in on Raw at the moment.
Yeah, because like 2015, he was like the worst thing on Raw. Like, by far the worst thing. And when you're the worst thing on a show that also has the golden trees playing Pokemon Go on it, you know there's problems. Whereas this year, he's right up there. Like, 2016 was a good year for him. The back end of it.
Yeah, from the killing the jobbers to the stuff with Sami Zayn to this week squaring off with Seth Rollins. They're doing all the right things to keep him as a believable monster. And hopefully they can keep this momentum up for him.
And he's not going to win. If he does win, I'm going to sue. Speaking of suing, segue, Mark Hunt is suing Brock Lesnar and the UFC for Lesnar's entire $2.5 million purse.
I could see where he's coming from, because Mark Hunt, it wasn't only Brock Lesnar who tested positive after fighting Mark Hunt. Alistair Overeem did, and quite a few guys who he has fought have since tested positive for drugs after the fact. And you know for a fact, most of the guys he was fighting in Japan and Pride were juiced up to the eyeballs, because that it was constant over there, because he didn't test for anything. So, and he's got a point. Like, someone the size and the strength and the skill of Lesnar can do damage. And if he was on something for the fight itself, and the fact that the punishment has been a year of not fighting, so what, he'll go to WWE and make his seven figures, and a $250,000 fine, and that's it, and no reprimand from the UFC itself. If the UFC had just turned around to him and said, okay, he's tested positive, we're going to give you half of Brock's purse as a gesture to you, I don't think this lawsuit would have happened. But because the UFC sat on it, it's where he's come across with all this, and he's joined that new fighters union, and he's become very bitter, and you can understand why.
Well, it's the third time in a row it's happened to him. I'd be bitter if it was the third time in a row it's happened to me. And I think the disparity in pay was ridiculous. Now we look back on it, UFC 200 was a train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
Just a complete train. Like, kind of, remember when WrestleMania 19 nearly didn't happen? Because, Austin went missing, Kurt Angle freaked out. Like, Lesnar nearly killed himself. Like, it was that kind of level of misery. And then when John Jones got busted, and there's an interview going, yeah, you shouldn't have done that, and then went and did the same thing. Oh.
Yeah, it's... It was still a good show, UFC 200. I still enjoyed it, but it could have been so much more. And again, from like a tangent sort of view, talking about disparities in pay, you've got Amanda Nunes, who destroys Miesha Tate at UFC 200 to win the title, and then comes into the fight with Ronda Rousey at UFC 207. Not publicized at all, even though she's the bantamweight champion. All the marketing is she's back, talking about Rousey. Destroys Rousey in less than a minute and earns less than one tenth of what Rousey had.
She had a 200,000 compared to
3 million for Rousey.
I thought what Dana White said was quite interesting though, because he got taken to task on this by Michael Bisping, who is obviously becoming one of my favourite things in the UFC. He was just like, do you regret not marketing Nunes more? And he was just like, no, I could have invested $1 million in marketing Amanda Nunes. The fact is, no one knew who she was. Whereas now, everyone knows who Amanda Nunes is.
Yeah. And Amanda Nunes as well, I think, caught in the aftermath of the fact that she couldn't do any press for that fight because Rousey wasn't doing any press for that fight, which is another massive double standard, because Conor McGregor refused to do one particular press conference and got dropped from UFC 200. Yet Rousey refuses to do any press whatsoever for this show, and it's all fine, no problem whatsoever. Just because she's represented by the company who now owns the UFC and has been for a long time.
Yeah.
But then you've got like now, and Amanda Nunes handled it brilliantly. She's fastly becoming one of my favorite characters to listen to at press conferences and on podcasts, because she does not give a fuck. She just says whatever's on her mind. First thing she says after she wins, it's Ronda Rousey's trainer fault because they told her she was a boxer. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. And it's true.
Yeah. Just in the octagon, she needs to retire and go do movies. So I was like, yeah, probably.
He used to do what Gina Carano did. Gina Carano lost once to Cyborg and then disappeared into that actress. I don't know if Rousey will come back. Once you get destroyed like that twice in a row, mentally it's got to take its wear and tear. So we'll see if she does actually decide whether she's coming back or not. But I hope she does, but they can't throw her into the title fight with these killers. While she did popularise women's MMA and put it on the map, the game is definitely starting to pass her by.
Yeah, she's definitely on her way out. I think when she came in, women's MMA was a very new thing. And now I think it's evolved to the point where it's not only caught up with her, it's kind of usurped her.
Yeah, everyone that she's fighting now, the likes of like Amanda Nunes, who is such a good boxer and such a good striker, she's another level above most of the people she goes in there with. Rousey's game was a judo, and she did really well when she utilised the judo. But she still did have trouble with some people, even in that big run. Like Miesha Tate, that second fight with Miesha Tate, it took till the third round to finish Miesha off in that particular instance. And no one had pushed Rousey past the first couple of minutes up to that point. But Holly Holm picked apart her weaknesses straight away, and Amanda Nunes did it just in rapid time.
Yeah, you can't walk through those kind of punches to try and grapple. But anyway, let's move on. Raw, what stood out for you on Monday Night Raw?
Again, it's Jericho and Owens. I thought everything they did that was great. The fact that Jericho is now United States champion is brilliant, because it's the one belt which he hasn't had up until now. And there's very few things in WWE he hasn't done, outside of winning the Royal Rumble and some of the more match specific things. He's done everything. And I thought, did you see the clip on YouTube of the interview backstage after the show went off the air?
I did not. Do I need to see it?
Yes, you will laugh your head off. Those two are backstage. The new backstage interviewer is interviewing him, and they're just kicking off because it's not Tom Phillips and they want to abuse Tom Phillips. So they send him away only to bring him back. But then they realize he's taller, so they stand on the steps near the gorilla position to be taller than them. And you've got Jericho going, I'm the great Jericho-ly. And it's absolutely brilliant. Well worth a watch if you get a chance on the YouTube channel. It's one of the Raw Fallout videos. But yeah, I thought that was good. I thought the fact that, again, keeping Strowman strong because he's the one who interrupted the match in the first place, which led to it happening later in the show. Unfortunately, the foreshadowing of Reigns winning the Universal belt is not good.
No.
We could potentially be going into WrestleMania with John Cena and Roman Reigns holding the main titles on both shows.
There'll be riots.
Hopefully that doesn't happen, and I really want AJ to keep the belt all the way through to WrestleMania. If he loses it at Mania, fair enough, but he deserves to have that long run. And Owens too. Owens has worked hard. But yeah, other than that, I thought Raw was it was what it was this week. A few standout things, but nothing spectacular. It needs to get better, especially as Rumble's only 2 weeks away.
Let's talk about the tweet that Rusev sent at the end of Raw, saying, congratulating Chris Jericho, after 17,000 matches, you finally beat Roman Reigns. Not like anyone else had a chance.
Yeah. Did you see the, have you seen the FIFA tournament that Xavier Woods did on Up, Up, Down, Down?
No.
It was Rusev was in it, and his normal nickname for the show is Tong Po, and for FIFA he turned around and he changed his nickname to Roman Reigns because he never loses in FIFA. And it's brilliant. Rusev's very, very dry sense of humour, especially over Twitter, is just absolutely amazing. And I did laugh my head off when I read that tweet.
Apparently he's getting a lot of heat for it.
Why? That's his character. He just rips the piss. Yeah, he's been doing that on Twitter for ages.
That's his job. I like it when guys who aren't, whose characters in ring aren't that funny, just come alive on Twitter. Like Big E used to do it. Big E on Twitter was phenomenal.
Like, again, it made people stand up and pay attention to him when he was Ziggler's lackey, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, like when people used to call him Ryback, and he was like, I prefer Chuck Lesnar. And I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And Rusev is just, he is one of my favourite aspects of Raw in general. I think that it's a shame that they don't utilise him better, but he will get utilised better. You can just see it coming.
Yeah, completely.
I think he'll be this year's trial Universal Championship run, when that person normally gets the belt just to see if they can do anything with it. I think he will get it, even if it's only for a couple of months.
And I hope he does.
Me too.
Who do you think had the worst botch this week? Big Cass on Raw or Carmella on SmackDown?
Oh, the SmackDown one. That was horrific. she's lucky she didn't break her bloody neck. She's trying to do a back bump as Carmella's trying to drag her forward.
I very rarely kind of go, oh, when I see things, because I'm a badass and I'm a white middle class man who plays computer games. I'm desensitized to violence, but that looks awful. And then trying to lock in the code of silence as well. She messed that up, and I don't know whose fault it was.
No, I think the code of silence I'd put on Carmella, but the actual bump leading into it I'd put on the local talent that she was in there with. I can't remember what name she had.
Who we will never see again.
Yeah, and you feel sorry for the people when that happens, because you never know when doing something like that could lead to something better down the line. Look at Crazy Mary Dobson doing jobs on NXT, and now she's signed to a full deal, and they're actually actively looking at her.
James Ellsworth. He's like, case in point, James Ellsworth. Yeah.
Whether you believe the Ellsworth experiments is dragging on, like I do personally, or not, he would never have had any sniffing of a chance, even 2 years ago. Yet now he's on quite a prominent storyline on SmackDown with Carmella, and they've quite cleverly moved him well away from anything to do with AJ and the world title.
I think he's great. I really like him. He's the ultimate underdog.
Yeah. And it's believable that people are gonna just beat the piss out of him. But then if he does get a win, then it's a true shock moment. So they have got something there when it comes to that.
And eventually it will get on my nerves, as most things do. But for now, James Ellsworth. I like it. I reckon he's the 2 second guy in the Rumble this year.
Yeah, I think so. I think technically it's going to be impossible to beat the record set by Santino of 1 second, but yeah. I think they could repeat it at least with Ellsworth.
He could certainly equal it.
Yeah, and I thought the way they paid everything off with AJ was spot on, with the fact that AJ just literally destroyed him. Knocked him out cold, pinned him, beat the piss out of him, and then said, "This is a disgrace to me, and this is a disgrace to the title," and then just walked off. That was the perfect way to end that storyline.
Yeah, completely. I love AJ. He is just so good.
When you think 2016s in general of people, he has to be right up there of people with the best years. From a match of the year contender with Nakamura at the Tokyo Dome, to debuting at the Royal Rumble, to a match of the year candidate with John Cena, a match of the year candidate with Roman Reigns, which is even more of an amazing thing to drag out, and then moving on, and then obviously winning the world title and keeping it all the way through the rest of the year.
He's had a very, very good year.
And for anyone who said he can't talk on the mic, they're eating those words now after some of the promos he's cut.
Where did that come from?
I think it was just more his time in TNA. They'd never give him a chance to do anything, did they? Especially on the mic. But you can definitely tell he's had it there, because it's not like he spent 6 months in NXT getting better. He just showed up straight away on the main roster.
Yeah, he just turned up, grabbed the mic, and cut some really good promos. And I don't know if it's just because TNA didn't give him the chance, or he just learned when he just hung out with people that did it well. But his mic work is stunning.
Yeah, especially that promo with Cena, where he said, you'll never be as good as me in the ring, and their chemistry in general, whether it's face to face on the mic or whether it's in a match, is superb. And the match at Royal Rumble should be very, very good. I don't know whether it will be SummerSlam 2016 good, but I really hope it at least gets up to that level gets on par with it.
Yeah, same. That really came out after SummerSlam and said, "You said the future goes through you and I beat you, so why are you still here?"
he's basically saying what the Smark fans are thinking. But it's a logical progression of his character. He has got a chip on his shoulder because he spent so much time outside of the WWE system, and now he's in the system. He's trying to make that impact, and it's again logic in wrestling. It's amazing how it works out when people try it.
Yeah, absolutely. When you use rational thought and just use a little bit of common sense,
think more than 2 weeks ahead.
Amazing things happen.
Yeah, agree 100%.
This is the Beast of Belfast, Big Demo, and you're listening to the European Uppercut Podcast.
I think we should look into our crystal ball for a second, PK. At this moment in time, who is winning the Royal Rumble?
I'm very inclined at the moment to say Undertaker, and he goes up against AJ at Mania.
Ah, AJ at Mania.
That's one thing that I think would be a genuine bit of surprise. But the nice thing about the Rumble this year is the fact that it is so unpredictable because there's so many big names in it. Where the last few years, it's been so blatantly obvious who was going to win.
Yeah.
From Cena, when Cena won it onwards, it's been, it's Cena this year, it's Batista, it's Roman and Reigns. Last year was a little bit of a surprise with Triple H, but still, people still kind of saw it coming.
But it wasn't a good surprise. It wasn't like you won the lottery kind of surprise. It's a kind of my daughter's pregnant kind of surprise.
My daughter's got full-blown AIDS sort of surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to put the boot in that at all, but that's... Well, I did, but I pushed it out. But you just went there.
I had to try. I've got to try and keep up with your level of comments. I can't be lagging behind too much.
You cannot. It is true. This is what I have started. I'm inclined to think Undertaker as well, but I think we're getting Undertaker Cena title versus career.
Yeah. If the Undertaker had never won it, I'd say he was more of a lock to actually win it. But because he has won it previously, that's where my doubt comes in a little bit.
Yeah.
My other dream scenario is Balor returns from injury and wins the Rumble to reclaim the title that he never lost.
This is also something that I have written down. What's happening with Balor? And do we have any surprise entrants currently?
I personally think it's a pretty high chance that Ty Dillinger comes in at number 10.
That just writes itself.
Even if it's not a full-on call-up and he's just there for the Rumble match, how over he's gotten on NXT, how good his matches have been recently and how long he's been in developmental, he deserves it. Yeah. I'd love Joe. I'd love Nakamura to show up. But again, you can't really take too much away from NXT. The Revival would be good to show up and then run roughshod over the Rumble for a stretch before being eliminated.
By Roman Reigns.
More than likely, unfortunately. And then again, Roman Reigns is in the title match, so he won't be in the Rumble. Oh,
this is true. Unless he loses, can they put him in it if he loses?
I don't know, because historically... And the champion, whoever's been defending the belts at least, and the people who they've been defending against haven't shown up in the Rumble because they've had the title opportunity already. But there's not saying that they won't try and do something different and off the wall with it this year. Like if Owens loses to Reigns and he comes into the match, or Jericho defends his US title and then says, well, I don't care about just doing that. I've never been Universal Champion either. He throws his name into the hat. And also, I've never won the Royal Rumble. I want it's quite good because there's loads of ways that you could play it, but there's also reasonably about four or five people who could potentially win it by this point. They could throw a complete curveball and actually give it to Strowman. They probably won't in 99% likelihood, but they could.
Can you see Braun Strowman main eventing WrestleMania?
It doesn't necessarily have to be the last match, though.
No, this is true.
They could do, yes, he's won his title opportunity. Here's your semi-main cooldown match, and then here's your Undertaker, whatever, versus Korea to end the show.
Mm-hmm.
So there's loads of different options and loads of different avenues that you could take it. But I think the most likely to me at the moment are Taker or a returning Balor.
Cool. I'm going to go Taker or Chris Jericho.
I'd love it if it was Jericho. He's worked too hard the last 18 months. And he's definitely earned it.
This is the best Chris Jericho I've seen in years.
Since 2008. Since the original major heel turn and the program with Michaels.
Yeah. Well, didn't he punch Shawn Michaels' wife? Didn't that happen?
He meant to be a worked punch, and she was a bit too far forward, and he actually smacked her.
Oh, wow.
gave her a proper shiner.
That's unfortunate.
But the oh, that's the other thing about Buddy Raw with the Shawn Michaels stuff. No. If you're not going to come back and do anything remotely of substance, just stay away. Don't tarnish your legacy by plugging some movie which is probably going to be terrible.
Or referencing films that were nominated for Oscars in 2003.
Yeah.
From the way all the film references, the Golden Globes, if you didn't know what they were, by the end of Raw and SmackDown, you just must know it was Meryl Streep in a room.
Yeah.
Because that's all they talked about. Because she gave that really weird speech.
Yeah, calling out mixed martial arts, and you're like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, and it's like, how, like, what does this have to do with films?
No one from the MMA has ever said anything remotely even about movies, never mind Meryl Streep.
Yeah, I know. And it's just like, oh yeah, Donald Trump made fun of a disabled reporter, because Hollywood does disability so well.
They're so sensitive.
Yeah. No one crips up in Hollywood, Rain Man, Eddie Redmayne. So, yeah, I think Meryl Streep needs to be very, very careful about what she says.
Yeah, I did think some of the MMA promotions handled it really well, though. Like Scott Coker from Bellator invited her down to a show. Dana White said she's an uppity 80-year-old woman, but she's also not our demographic, so who cares? It's like, yeah, very true. And then the people interviewed her went, oh, she's not 67, actually. It's like, I just assumed she was about 80. It's like, Dana, you're a legend.
Dana White in interviews is awesome.
Again, someone who genuinely does not give a shit. He's made his money. He can go away to his little ranch in the middle of nowhere with all his toys. Like, if anyone watches Dana White looking for a fight, the first episode of season 2 is up on YouTube. It shows you, like, Dana White's house in Kansas or Iowa or somewhere like middle America. And he's got Ferraris, and he's got supercharged muscle cars that he takes drag racing, and a full go-kart circuit on his property, and absolutely nuts. Like he doesn't care what people think or say about him, because he's made his money.
Because he's got the wedge.
This is the Honky Tonk Man, the greatest WWE Intercontinental Champion of all time, and you're listening to the European Uppercut on the Trending Topics Network.
I'm just a honky tonk man. I'm cool. I'm cocky. I'm ba 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 ba.
Moving on now to our main topic for this episode. This weekend, PK, we see WWE crown its first ever UK champion. Are you excited?
I'm over the moon. I can't wait for this. It's going to be looking at a lot of the guys who are in it, and the fact that it's in Blackpool, and it's going to have that atmosphere. It's going to be a really, really good weekend for British wrestling.
So I've got the brackets in front of me, and you are Mr. UK Wrestling on this podcast. So let's go through them, and we can determine who you do know, who you don't know, and who we need to watch out for. As I say we, myself, people such as myself who don't know the UK scene as well as you. So we have Tyler Bate versus Tucker.
Tyler I know really well. I've worked with Tyler on shows since he was 16. He's only 19 now. He's absolutely incredible for his age. Works a very old-school British technical style, like lots of a lot of the stuff that like Nigel McGuinness used to do, like the going between the legs and like offering his hand only to flip around and confuse people. It's and a lot of stuff Zack Sabre Jr. also does now. And but Tyler is fantastic. Like when he counts his influences as people like Johnny Saint, but then also Kane, he's a very unique guy. Tucker. In the other half of that match, I don't know Tucker, I'll be honest. I know he's from Northern Ireland. Haven't really had a lot of exposure to him over in this country, but because of the amount of press that Tyler's been getting on the on the when it comes to interviews and the actual like the preview show and things like that. I think Tyler's going to go through in that first match.
Excellent. Now, there's someone I do know in this next match, and I'll explain how I know him and why he's not a fan shortly. Jordan Devlin versus Danny Burch.
Danny Burch, a.k.a. Martin Stone, for people who have only seen his UK work, and that is very short run in NXT.
Which is why he doesn't like me. Basically, here's the story. Myself and a very good friend of mine, Jason Rivera, years ago used to do a wrestling podcast on the Sundays, and every week we'd have a segment where we'd book Danny Burch in a new gimmick. And I think someone told him about it, and he got very upset at Brony Boy Burch as the gimmick. That was the straw that broke the camel's back for him when he came out in like MLP gear. I essentially booked him as Bailey before Bailey was a thing.
Oh, God.
And then he used to tweet us, or he used to tweet Jason really angrily. So that's how I know Brony Boy Burch.
I think this will be a good match. I am a big fan of Jordan Devlin. The stuff he's been doing for Over the Top Wrestling in Dublin, Over the Top's fantastic. If anyone has a chance to check out any of their stuff, genuinely unique promotion. Like, always seem to have a lot of fun. This is the same promotion that had Father Ted characters show up during a match.
I was about to ask you that because I heard about this from Connell. Are these the same guys that did the Father Ted Steen wrestling event?
Yes, and they had the characters show up, including the world's most boring priest, who then proceeded to count the world's slowest three counts before the guy kicked out on 2.9. It was absolutely brilliant. And Jordan Devlin, obviously he's been getting a lot of talk because he started his training with Finn Balor in Ireland, so you know he's got that pedigree and that backing behind him, and I can genuinely really see a Tyler Bate versus Jordan Devlin second round match being an absolute barn burner.
Were there any children at this Father Ted themed wrestling event?
It is a more adult themed show, but you do see like older kids, teenagers in the crowd on some of the videos.
Probably keep them away from the world's most boring priest. Oh yeah, at the end, edit that one out. Okay, we have Trent Seven versus HC Dyer.
HC Dyer, also known as the Prospect on for Southside Wrestling, teaming up with someone we'll talk about a little bit later, Joe Connors. Again, good. He's not been around the UK scene for a long time. He's very much a getting his legs underneath him, so this is a massive opportunity for him. On the other side of that coin, you've got someone like a Trent Seven, who has only really been actively wrestling for a few years, considering he's one of the older guys within this tournament. But he's absolutely amazing. If anyone's watched anything that ICW have put out over the last year or so, people will know how good he is, from his matches with Wolfgang, with Mikey Whiplash. If anyone has actually listened to my plugs every time I'm on the show and checked out any of the Fight Club Pro on vimeo.com/Fight Club Pro, where their latest show, Attack Club Pro, in conjunction with Attack Wrestling, is now up. Cheap plug there. But yeah, Trent Seven's fantastic. And there's very, very little doubt in my mind that he's going through to the second round.
Excellent. Which brings us on to someone you just mentioned, Wolfgang, versus the least vegan name I've ever heard for a wrestler in my life, Tyson T-Bone.
Yeah, Wolfgang, current ICW World Heavyweight Champion, which is a massive get for the tournament. And we'll get on to another current British champion a bit later on when we talk through the second half of the bracket. I think Wolfgang's fantastic. He's a big brawler style, but he can fly. is his gimmick is very much like the old school William Regal power of the punch. He's got a set of gold skull emblazoned brass knuckles that he uses to cheat his way to victory.
That sounds so illegal.
Oh, it's brilliant. And Tyson T-Bone is a guy who's been around the UK scene for a long time. Only really started to get loads of traction within the last couple of years, and I do really rate T-Bone. I've had the pleasure to call quite a few of his matches for TNT, and he's just a bruiser. Like, if you put him in there with someone, you know it's going to be a physical match. So I think it's good having this style of match here, because it's going to be like complete opposite style match to something like a Tyler Bate and Tucker, and it's going to really show the diversity within British wrestling. I still see Wolfgang going through to see a Wolfgang versus Trent Seven second round match, though.
He just sounds like Tyson T-Bone. He sounds like he works on a building site. If anyone works in construction, it's Tyson T-Bone. He's the one, based on like names alone, I would least like to mess with.
I did have to laugh because it sounds like he's putting on a bit of a character. If anyone's watched the UK tournament preview show and knows of T-Bone's personal background, he's definitely putting on a bit of an accent there. And I did chuckle a little bit, because it's very just sums up WWE, that people have to have characters and things behind them, not just the fact that he's a brilliant wrestler and can chop someone so hard that they bleed.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Nice.
It's crazy.
I'm more and more stuck with him.
I've seen make people wince, to say the least.
I like Bubblegum. He's my second favourite wrestler named after food. Like, cheeseburger's my boy.
Well, hopefully by the time this UK tournament's over with, Tyson T-Bone will be your third favourite, named after food.
Or maybe my second, if he's crawled on bubblegum. No one's toppling cheeseburger. Cheeseburger's just like, yeah. He looks like I'd bully him if I went to school with him, just cheeseburger. That's a joke, by the way. I'm very much pro anti-bullying charities. I'm a star. No one tweet me. That was clearly a joke. Also, Google image search cheeseburger and tell me I'm wrong. There we go. Done.
It's crazy that he's so over in New Japan. That still boggles my mind.
That final powerbomb in that battle royal.
Oh, I know, evil.
It's like he really went for it as well. And that the cool stage afterwards. I think I've made my point.
I nearly killed him, but I made my point.
Came in number one, nearly killed a guy. I'm essentially Jimmy Snuka. There we go. Oh, it's going to be fun to edit. Okay, in the next one, we have Mark Andrews versus Dan Maloney.
Obviously, Mark Andrews, people will know him more as Mandrews on TNA. Winner of British Boot Camp Season 2. Genuinely amazing talent. One of my favourite high flyers in the country. Lucky enough to know Mark quite well and been out on drinking with him on a few occasions.
Oh, wow.
After Fight Club Pro.
He looks like he can hold his booze.
He's hysterical. Really, really funny guy. Genuinely just loves to have a laugh at a joke, but he's one he can put on just superb matches when he really... when he's in that mode, and you know he's going to be for this one. Dan Maloney is another one who's coming out of the Midlands, trained, works a lot with Fight Club Pro. He's one of their like dojo students who has really started to make an impact. And again, he's only 19. It's crazy to me the fact that they've recognised the talent in some of the really young guys and are giving them a chance. And Dan Maloney's incredible. I can see Mark going through into the second round, but I think people will be talking about Dan Maloney by the time the match is over. He's got a very hard-hitting, very physical style, but he's also got a great villain personality to go with it. Like, I've seen him wrestle a Fight Club Pro, and it was part of a four-way match that also had Nixon Newell, female wrestler, as part of the match. and just taking great delight in laying in some vicious chops to Nixon, to which the crowd, to someone in the crowd shouted at him, "You're a dick, Dan Maloney," and he turned around and went, "Yeah, I am, actually," and then just carried on chopping the shit out of her.
Nice.
Before getting chopped in the penis to come back.
That's such bad PR for white people. Like,
But yeah, he's Dan's fantastic. Mark's fantastic. It's another one of the first round matches I'm genuinely really looking forward to. But I could see Mark with being the more veteran of the two going through to the second round.
Which leads us into James Drake versus someone I've heard of, Joseph Connors.
Yeah, James Drake, product of the Future Shock Wrestling Academy in Manchester. He's brilliant. Again, another really young guy. I think he's 23, maybe 24. I first started seeing him watching wrestle when he was only 18 as part of the Blackpool Blondes tag team. And since then, he's gone from standard, what you think of standard young British wrestler build, to looking absolutely jacked, working really hard to progress himself. He's now working wrestling more or less full time because he does all the camps and he's constantly traveling, and he's fantastic. Just a great character that I think will really shine through. He's had some great matches for Progress as well in guest spots against likes of Pastor William Eva. And that got a lot of people talking, and this is just going to do even more to further his brand. Joseph Connors, if anyone watches WCPW stuff on YouTube, people will have seen Joseph Connors. Also, he's had a big run in Southside. I've been lucky enough to call quite a few of Joe's matches for TNT. This is going to be the running theme of this talking, and I'm trying not to repeat myself, but he's a great talent. He's very adaptable, whether he's playing the more villainous role or whether he's the hero. He knows how to adapt. He knows how to keep the crowd on his side. And again, this one's going to be a really good match. I can see it being Connors just because James Drake has got a lot more left in him career-wise because he is so young, and Joe is just that little bit older, a little bit more experienced. But Mark versus Joe or James would be a very good second round match. Sounds or Dan like, versus either of them, to be fair.
Sounds like we're in for a very good 2 days this weekend thus far.
Oh yeah,
we then move into the penultimate match in the brackets. Pete Dunne versus Roy Johnson.
I don't know Roy Johnson, I'll be honest on that one. Pete Dunne, though, current Fight Club Pro champion, current Progress champion as well. Absolutely fantastic. Again, another one of these really young guys. He's only 23, about to turn 24, I believe, who just gets it. He's properly transformed himself over the last year or so. He's gone from flippy little indie guy to doing this bruiserweight character who's just basically a hard-nosed guy, likes to just brawl and bite, but you can get technical as well. Saw him have a very good technical main event for Progress against Zack Sabre Jr. in Sheffield just before Christmas. And I think Peter Locke to go through in this one. For me, absolutely brilliant guy, and again, someone I'm really happy for because I've known Pete for a few years now.
Do you think WWE will pick up on the fact that Roy's second name is Johnson and try and book him as The Rock's cousin?
I can't see that happening personally, but you can never put it past them.
Because if they do, he's winning. Like, all you've got to do is pretend to be The Rock's cousin. You look vaguely Samoan. How would you like to be The Rock's cousin? And finally, we have the name that's probably worth the most in Scrabble, Saxon Huxley, versus Sam Gradwell.
Sam Gradwell, also known as Ricky J. McKenzie, on the Northwest scene. Been watching Sam for a few years now in GPW, Grand Pro Wrestling in Wigan. Again, someone who's really worked hard, really pushed himself. He's been traveling to China. And to be honest, his in-ring style for quite a while, I've thought, was made for something like this, something that would get noticed by the likes of WWE. Saxon Huxley, also known as the Muscle Cat, wrestles quite a lot in the Hartlepool, Leeds area. Again, I had the pleasure of calling at the last TNT show I worked. He was part of the Open Challenge and put on a very good match. And I think this is one of the more outsider ones for me that either guy could go through. I personally think it's going to be Sam, but again, it wouldn't surprise me if it was Saxon either. Very much like JD versus Joseph Connors, it wouldn't surprise me if either guy went through in that one.
And who is your pick to win first of all the whole thing?
Okay, so that's the off. So I said Tyler Bate or Jordan Devlin second round. I'll say Tyler goes through that. I'll say Trent gets through Wolfgang. I'll say Trent gets through Tyler, so that'll be Trent in the final. I'll say Mark Andrews gets all the way through to the semis on that bracket against Pete Dunne. I think Pete Dunne will then get through that. I'm actually going to say Pete Dunne would be my overall pick to win the tournament. He's young, he's got a great attitude, he's got a great look, and it would genuinely be quite one of the more surprising ones. But I would love to see Trent Seven win it as well, because I'm not just saying this because he is one of my friends, but since he's really started to push himself and he's really just gone, no, I need to get myself not just work in the Midlands, I need to get out elsewhere, he's been absolutely destroying it in ICW, in Progress, anywhere he's put his mind to it. He's been brilliant, so it would genuinely wouldn't surprise me if Trent Seven won it either.
I am going to go based on my zero knowledge and give it... I'm going to go for it. Tyson T-Bone, least vegan wrestling sound, least vegan wrestler ever.
Okay.
And who's your pick to click? Who do you think is going to be remembered?
I've got a few for that, to be honest. I think...
Pick one. Don't be greedy.
I think people are going to remember Tyler just purely because of his look, his age, and his wrestling style. He's going to have a very, very memorable showing to me.
Excellent. So thank you for talking us through that. I thought I learned more about British wrestling, and I'm sure our listeners did.
There's also, if people have got the WWE Network, there's a very good short, like 20-minute preview of the tournament that they put up after Raw. Highly recommend going to check that out as well. Just talks about the history of Blackpool for wrestling, in little short interviews with each of the guys to get you to know their characters a little bit more, and it's well worth the watch.
And if people don't know how much the WWE Network is, how much is it, PK?
Well, I pay about £6 because I'm still paying American rates, but it's $9.99 officially.
I'm also paying American rates
with my address of 123 Fake Street in 90210.
Nice. I live at the Jolly Madison Hotel in New York.
Ah, good old workarounds when they didn't want to release the network in the UK at a reasonable time.
Wait a year, break the law. I made my choice.
Me too. Save a couple of quid a month in the process.
Yeah, I'm southern. I don't know any better. Anyway, so what was your highlight of the week of wrestling?
Highlight of the week of wrestling in general, I would I'd go with rewatching Okada versus Kenny Omega again for the third time. The match just never gets old.
Okay, PK's highlight in the show notes was a replay. Excellent. I'm going to go with Chris Jericho winning the US title.
That's a very, very, very close second. And the Jack Gallagher of Daivari stuff on 205 Live.
It's hysterical.
I think what they've been doing with Jack, I made up. It's brilliant. Like the from the duel to the parlay to announcing his intentions to interfere in the match because it's a gentlemanly thing to do.
Superb. I give it 2 weeks before he invites Daivari to a ramshackle.
I give it two or three months before he's cruiserweight champion. I'll be honest. I can't wait. Because again, people really seem to be grasping his wrestling style as well.
Yeah, I reckon there's a few more programs to come. I reckon we need to get Neville Aries out the way, and that's going to be awesome. Mm. Neville Aries is going to be so good.
Yeah. I think Neville Swan as well, as that carries on, that's just going to get better.
How good is Neville as a heel?
Again, one of the absolute highlights of Raw. I didn't know he had it in him. I was saying this to Legend last time I was on, not long after the turn happened, that he's historically always been the babyface. Like, even when he was on the indies as Pac, he was the big babyface. And the fact that he's got this heel character in him is just superb.
Yeah, I'm so stoked for him. I've always liked him. I think they misbooked him terribly. And hopefully he can be one of the plethora of guys that started in NXT that now make a real go at it on the main roster. Speaking of that, what's happened to Bo Dallas? I was believing in Bo, and then he just sort of disappeared.
Yeah, because he seemed to actually, and again, it was good stuff he was doing, getting frustrating and beating people down. But you can only badly book someone for so long without having to do something drastic to get them out of it. Neville being the case in point.
Yeah.
Drastic changing character, and then he's there now. People are genuinely loving what he's doing.
They need to get rid of him. Him and like Curtis Axel.
I think unfortunately for a lot of those guys, that normal big purge, they've got to be high up on that list that people expect to be gone.
When is the purge normally? Is it only just after WrestleMania?
Yeah, it's normally before the middle of May, isn't it? Like, they get Mania out the way, and then like there's a trickle of people who end up going around about that time.
Well, we should do a sweepstake for that. Just like we'll do that. Who do you think is going in the May purge? Just send us your tweets. Also, we can guess what PK's opening in the background. We'll give out a prize.
Sounds good.
But yeah, tweet us in who you think is going to be in the purge. Tweet us any thoughts you have at the EU pod on Twitter. Email us in at eurouppercut@gmail.com. We'll read anything. We'll answer anything. Because we're awesome. Like, I mean, if it's like overly racist, we probably won't read it. I'll be really honest. AH Walker, like, directing that to you. But
or they'll just make you read it next time you're on.
Yeah, because I can say these things, right? It's not like I've got a reputation to protect. And yeah, this has been fun. I've enjoyed doing this with you, PK. This is our first time as a duo, as a tag team.
Yeah, it's been a really fun show. Thank you very much for having me on and letting me babble on as always.
I feel like this is the start of a beautiful bromance going.
Yeah. Going on the north south bromance.
Yes, we're bridging the north south divide with wrestling and friendship. And it's amazing. Is there anything, stupid question, you'd like to plug before you leave?
Fight Club Pro, I've got their first big show of the year coming up on the 11th of February at the Fiction Warehouse in Wolverhampton. Check them out. Check out vimeo.com/Fight Club Pro. Announced for the big Easter weekender, Fight Club Pro are running Wolverhampton on the Friday, Manchester on the Saturday, and London on the Sunday. Announced so far to appear, Pentagon Dark, Phoenix, and Zack Sabre Jr. That's going to be absolutely massive. So if you can get to any of those three shows, or all three, because they're all relatively convenient to travel to, do so. The big major plugs for me are... obviously, TNT Extreme Wrestling, making our return on the 25th of February. Not long after, we are holding a Royal Rumble viewing event in the Walkabout in Liverpool City Centre, including a WWE 2K17 tag team tournament, only £5 for entry, and that includes a go in the tournament if you wanted to have a go in that. Also part of that is a meet and greet and a sit down live podcast recording with Bubblegum, Ashton Smith and Sam Bailey. Ashton Smith and Sam Bailey, people will have seen on World of Sport on New Year's Eve, and Bubblegum is genuinely one of the best guys in the UK at the moment. TNT Extreme Wrestling, we've just announced this week that we have Joe Connors on our next show taking on Nathan Cruz. Should be a very good match, Nathan Cruz making his TNT Extreme debut. Also, we have our massive main event, which is a Fatal 4-Way consisting of Tyler Bate, Travis Banks, Martin Kirby and Wild Boar for the number one contendership for the TNT Extreme Championship. Tickets are available via the standard O2 Academy ordering, which is ticketweb.co.uk. Saturday, 25th February, Merseyside Massacre 2017 at the O2 Academy in Liverpool.
Sounds awesome. I have nothing to plug at the moment. Everything's very much being done and under wraps. I'll be in Glasgow on the 17th for the whole evening, so if any of the Glasgow contingent want to come and say hey, I'll be in a hotel somewhere, one I would assume. You can also follow me on the old Twitter at Adam_Pearson and on Instagram at Adam_Pearson_TV. PK, if I wanted to tweet you random thoughts and abuse, how would I find you?
You'll find me on Twitter and Instagram at PK_1UP.
PK_1UP, as in the 1UP, what's up, 1UP Power Up, excuse me, podcast.
Yes, which hopefully when I actually fix my home PC, we'll be able to record one soon. But I've not had a PC since well before Christmas because my hard drive blew up. So it's unfortunately put a little bit of a scupper on the podcast at the moment. But yeah, it's PK_1UP.
Awesome. Well, and I think that's going to wrap it up for us. So even though he's not here, I'm going to use my telepathic powers and say the living legend, wait for it, has left the building.